Robert is the co-founder and CEO of AnyScale, which is a Series C unicorn company backed by top VCs, including Andreessen, Edition, NEA, and Foundation Capital. Customers of its open source framework, Ray, include Uber, DoorDash, Airbnb, Pinterest, and OpenAI. Robert actually started the company while he was a machine learning PhD student at Berkeley, and this was actually the second unicorn startup that's come out of the same lab, the first one being Databricks. AnyScale's goal is to enable every developer and team to succeed with AI without needing to worry about building and managing infrastructure. So he's right in the heart of all of this stuff, and he has a very unique vantage point into what's going on in AI, and so we're very excited to hear from him tonight. And with that, please join me in welcoming Robert and Kanjun.
Yeah, thanks so much for inviting me.
Yeah, thank you. Truly, like, very, very grateful. Not everyone would come join in on just a few hours' notice. Thank you so much.
I'm also impressed with how many people you can actually fit in this space.
Yeah, it's true. Quite the turnout. Okay, so let's just start off about you. I gave a quick intro, but that was just scratching the surface. So just start off by telling us about your journey. I know you were a PhD student at Berkeley when you started this company. So from then to today, what's happened?
Yeah. Well, so our company's commercializing an open source project, Ray, which we actually started about halfway through the PhD. I started out doing the PhD at Berkeley working on AI, so trying to design better algorithms for training deep learning models, reinforcement learning, optimization, these kinds of things. And I wasn't thinking about distributed systems or infrastructure at all. But as we were designing new algorithms and trying to come up with better ways to train models, one of the challenges and pain points we just ran into over and over was how to scale this stuff across GPUs or clusters. And so we actually found ourselves spending all of our time was building the tooling for scaling these things, managing clusters, you know, provisioning GPUs, all of these kinds of things. And we thought there was an opportunity to just make that easier to do. And that it wasn't just us. A lot of people in AI were running into the same bottlenecks and building their own ad hoc tools. And we wanted to try to make that easier. So we started an open source project, which is Ray. We had no plans to start a company at the time. In fact, people brought that up and we, you know, weren't even thinking about it. Our goal was really to just make the open source project successful, get more users, make it easy to build these scalable applications. And as we were working on that, we started to get some people using the open source project. I think Ant Group in China was our first real, like, serious user. And actually today they run something like, you know, a third of their compute or a third to a half of their compute on Ray. They have like a 4,000 GPU cluster they are serving all their models with using Ray, stuff like that. They, you know, process millions of transactions per second at the peak capacity. So they've come a long way with Ray. But anyway, as we were, you know, a lot of the stuff we were doing to make the open source project successful and to try to grow adoption is similar to the kinds of stuff you might do if you're starting a company. Obviously, you know, we're doing the engineering work to build it, but we're also talking to users, trying to recruit other grad students to use it, trying to recruit other grad students to work with us and help build the project. You know, trying to evangelize the project, giving talks, writing blog posts, trying to get on Hacker News, you know, all of these kinds of things. And so as we were graduating, we wanted to keep working on this. We wanted to continue to really try to make distributed computing easy and it easy to scale AI. And we felt that we needed to be able to move much faster and put more energy behind it. And starting a company seemed like the right vehicle for doing that. And we also thought it could make sense as a business because, well, we had seen Databricks as an example of commercializing open source successfully. And we thought something similar in terms of the business model could make sense. So that's what led us to start the company. And then, you know, from there, I mean, there's a lot more we could say about the journey since then, but maybe I'll pause there.
How do you build a business around an open source project? Yeah. Like, what's the difference between AnyScale and Ray?
Yeah, so that's a great question. So Ray is open source. What Ray does is it makes it easy to write Python applications that scale across, you know, multiple machines or GPUs or things like that. What AnyScale does is at its simplest, it's a managed Ray service. We run Ray for you. Kind of like if you think about Git is an open source project, but GitHub is a product, you know, which manages Git for you and then also builds a lot of tooling around Git to make it easier to collaborate, to make it easier to do issue tracking and, you know, CI, CD, things like that. So what AnyScale does, if you're using Ray, if Ray is important for your business, say you're using it to train models or do inference, if you run it on AnyScale, it'll be faster and cheaper. And so that we add a lot of value on the performance dimension. We also add a lot of value just on developer productivity and tooling.
So what makes a open source project a good business? There are a lot of open source projects that don't make good managed services. Did you know, Ray is the shape of a thing that could be a good business in the beginning? Or and also, what types of projects would you recommend people not turn into companies?
That's a great question. And I think we got a little bit lucky on that front. Some of our confidence came from seeing the Databricks example, because Spark has a lot of similarities in that it's a, I don't know, are you guys familiar with Apache Spark? Is that, okay. It's a distributed system for executing, for processing data, right? And we were much more focused on AI, on GPUs, on deep learning. But you know, it's the kind of thing where you write your application and it's the runtime that actually runs your application. So one important property is just that it's, you know, it has to be somewhat hard to do. Like Ray, when I think about businesses using our open source projects, using Ray, you can start out with Ray on your laptop with just one person, and it's you know, very easy to get started. But when you get to the point where you have dozens or hundreds of people building models or deploying models, and they're collaborating on many projects, and you have all these different clusters and jobs and services, at that point, these companies often end up with teams of 10 or 20 or 50 people managing and operating Ray, making sure if there's some error, somebody's getting paged, building tooling around it for reproducibility and debugging and observability and all these things. And so because people have to, as their usage grows, they have to build all this tooling around it. And that's typically not what they want to focus on as a business. We can accelerate that. You know, we can sort of just take all that work off their plate.
So the property is basically, it's like the typical freemium model, like, okay, you can start really quickly, but mm-hmm. as you use it more, it gets harder to use. You want to pay for something.
They have to be able to get a lot of value out of it, right?
That makes sense.
You can use just the open source projects very successfully without ever talking to us. You know, many people do this, but then you are, you know, making an investment. I think Ant Group, I mentioned, now has a team of like 100 people just sort of working on Ray and building stuff on top of Ray.
Got it. Thanks for explaining that. I'm curious, you've been working on this for about 4 years, is that right?
Yes, the company is 4 years old.
The company's for 4 years. When did you guys start Ray? Just out of curiosity.
2016,
okay.
So I've been working on it for a little while now.
Yeah, I imagine things have changed in the last year for you. Can you tell us about that and how the rise of ChatGPT and just this huge explosion in AI has changed the company?
Yeah, that's a great question. So going, say, 1 year back or 2 years back, our focus has been on scaling and distributed computing, right? And that's sort of what Ray was built for. And we would often get the question, if we're trying to hire a candidate or something like that, they would ask, do people really need scaling? Like, can't you kind of just do everything on a single machine? And people have stopped asking us that. So that's changed quite a bit. Now about, you know, our focus has sort of narrowed more over time. So Ray is actually quite general. You can scale arbitrary Python applications. When we started the company, we knew AI was the main use case we were excited about, but we viewed it as one of, you know, many possible use cases. Our language has changed over time. Then we were focusing on, you know, from just general purpose distributed computing to AI, and then from AI to deep learning, and then deep learning, and it's like deep learning on unstructured data, like text and images and video and audio. And I think that's really where we're very good, is deep learning on unstructured data. Now we're really focused on LLMs, which of course is deep learning on unstructured data. Something like 75% of the people who reach out to us who want to try out our stuff are doing LLM inference or fine tuning. So it has really zoomed in on, you know, where we need to focus as a company.
And when you kind of see these workloads happening, these inference and fine-tuning workloads, I guess you just released a fine-tuning API.
Yes.
And an endpoint that allows, I'll try to pitch it. You can now use open source models on any scale as an API. I think Llama 2. You can use Llama 2.
That's right.
Okay.
Yeah, so just to say a little bit about that. So we have three things that we've been building. We started with Ray, which is open source. Then we built AnyScale, which is our managed Ray offering. This is super flexible. You can kind of do anything with it. And then we very recently released an LLM API for open models. So it's like the OpenAI API, but you can use Llama 2 instead of GPT-4. If you're interested in trying out the Llama models, Code Llama, et cetera, this is just a really easy way to try it out. And then on top of the inference API, we just released the fine-tuning API. And I think fine-tuning is just going to be really important for people either looking to improve the quality of these models on specific tasks or reduce costs by using smaller models.
It does help a lot. I'm curious, the kinds of workloads that you're seeing across enterprises and startups, like what are some use cases people are using these models for that maybe are not super obvious? I guess give us the obvious use cases first. Like, are enterprises using it differently than startups? And then what are people using it for?
Yeah, I think when I think about enterprises, it's the use cases you would guess, like internal developer productivity, code completion, autocomplete, copilot type scenarios, customer support, streamlining, just being able to answer not all, but many customer support questions, or even summarizing customer support tickets if they're really long into shorter things so they don't have to read the whole thing. We also see it a lot for, so there's two things, right? There's internal productivity, like what I was just mentioning, and then there's improving the product experience. Like if you're an e-commerce site, people are looking, you know, doing search, like looking for things on your site. You can have a conversation-led discovery for finding products, because imagine you go to a store and you're trying to buy something and you talk to a sales representative there. You don't just give them a query and then they find the product. You have a conversation to help clarify your thoughts and what you're actually looking for and compare different products. So there's also things like helping generate, there's a lot of scenarios where you have missing data or data that's not that good. Like for, if you're a company like Instacart or some e-commerce site, you might have a lot of products with missing product images or not very good descriptions. So just improving the copy there and the images. So that's something we see a lot. I'm sure I'm forgetting a bunch of things.
What about startups?
Yeah. So there we see a lot more chatbots. I should say a lot of these larger companies have chatbots, but I mean, the chatbots are just helping you get something done on their main product. Here with startups, like the chatbot is the product. And I think, let's see. I think some of the more interesting ones I've seen are, you know, character-related chatbots are also where you talk to different characters. I think the code assistant stuff is very exciting. I think that's an area with a tremendous amount of potential. I think developers are going to become, you know, way more productive over time thanks to LLMs.
Yeah. I'm curious. I think people here are mostly kind of firmly in startup lands, probably working with other builders and other early stage startups. You, on the other hand, have lots of exposure to enterprises. And I'm so curious about what they're saying. Some people talk about how a lot of companies are basically telling their team, like, we need to incorporate AI, like, go incorporate AI. And they don't necessarily have a grand strategy for that. They're just kind of like, that's coming from above. Is that what you're seeing? I'm curious what your experiences have been, because I also imagine that the enterprises that you work with has changed over time. You know, predominantly the people who cared about scaling models in the past were like probably cutting edge tech companies. Obviously you've worked a lot with OpenAI, and I imagine now many more companies in like the Fortune 500 say are interested. So I'm just curious what they're saying, what you're seeing from them.
That is another difference from 1 year ago, which is that people, you know, like CEOs, CTOs of these large, potentially slow moving companies are thinking about AI quite a bit. And it sounds funny, but it's not uncommon to hear from some engineering leader who just got a request directly from their CEO that they need to infuse LLMs into their products.
And somehow.
You know, to sort of make that happen and build a team of, you know, engineers to do that. So a lot of these companies, they really have a lot of urgency. They are looking at their competitor, basically like CTOs or chief product officers say things like, generative AI is the biggest bet we're making over the next few years. We think this is the thing that will enable us to stay ahead of the competition. And so they're looking to move fast, right? And they're looking for companies and products that can help them move faster.
So going beyond generative AI, chatbots and everything, we work on agents and things that try to do bigger goals in the world. And I know AnyScale integrates with LangChain and Llama Index. Yeah. What are you seeing on the agent side?
Yeah, I think that's a fascinating area. I'm really excited for a future where, hundreds or thousands of models interact together to accomplish tasks. I think a lot of the important, interesting work there is around the sort of development frameworks and the debugging tools and the observability tooling for doing this, because debugging programs is hard, debugging distributed systems is hard, and if you have all these distributed components talking to each other with English or with vectors,
stochastically generated English.
Yeah, I think the debugging is just going to be you're going to need a new set of tools to really make that happen. I also think where we sit relative to this is sort of underneath. Like, we're trying to provide the best, the most scalable, cost-efficient, performant infrastructure for running the LLMs, running the models. And I think people often think, when we talk about latency, say, for these models, people often think, the latency is already pretty good. It outputs tokens as fast as I can read them, so does it really need to be any faster? That's just query and getting a response back. But if you have thousands of these things talking to each other and asking each other questions, and you're querying all these models before getting your response back, it's going to take a lot longer. And so I think the latency and performance dimension is going to need, still going to need orders of magnitude improvement there.
I agree. It feels like there are at least something we work on, like important abstractions missing. So,
by the way, one other thing I want to mention about the enterprises, since you asked, is that, so one another thing we announced just a few days ago is called AnyScale Endpoints, is our LLM API for the Llama models. We just announced something we call AnyScale Private Endpoints, which is the ability, same API, but the ability to deploy the entire backend, including all the models, and run it in your own cloud account. So the whole API can be private for your business. And then you can customize it, you can control it however you want, you can use dedicated compute, choose the hardware, deploy different models, et cetera. And that actually landed really well. People seem to want that.
Makes sense. It's like on-prem for models.
Yeah.
Yeah, I've heard that just these companies, they just will not send their data to OpenAI. That is just not okay.
That's the reaction we heard from a lot of people. Yeah.
Where do you think that comes from, by the way?
Good question. They give many different reasons. So it's privacy is one reason, but another reason is often about just control. Things like even being able to get the control things like the rate limits or reducing latency or just coupling it with other models they want to, they want to use. It's really either the privacy angle, where it's just I have highly sensitive customer data, and also my models are like my IP, and I just don't want to have my models leave my control. Or it is around the ability to customize things. The API is great, and I can do a lot of things with the API, but I could see my needs outgrowing what I can do with the API, right?
Do you ever see cost as an issue?
Oh, yes. We see cost all the time.
Okay.
I forgot about that. There's sort of two phases to adopting generative AI, right? There's when you're just starting out, you're building a product, you're shipping a product, and what matters is just validating that the product makes sense. And at that point, you're likely not thinking about cost. Once you've proven it out, then you're trying to make it real. And at that point, it's, okay, how do I scale this? How do I, improve the quality, reduce latency, reduce cost? And so cost is top of mind for everybody that we talk to. And that's actually an area we try to go really deep as a company.
Yeah, I was about to say, I think you made an exciting announcement during the Ray Summit about you being the lowest price point on the market, if you want to talk about that briefly.
I don't know if these numbers mean anything to you guys, but the 70 billion parameter Llama model, we are charging $1 per million tokens, which is the lowest price I'm aware of, I believe, on the market. And then, of course, the other models are less. And that's an area we're going to just, obviously, there's a lot of hard engineering work that goes into this. Yeah. We've been working on, you know, this infrastructure for quite a long time. So, you know, it's everything from the GPU and model optimizations to, you know, how you do multi-GPU, like tensor parallelism, pipeline parallelism, continuous batching, you know, auto-scaling across different GPUs, also trying to just take advantage of the cheapest GPUs in different regions or different clouds. So that's an area we're going to just keep continuing to try to push the limits there.
What are your opinions on open source model capabilities versus, you know, OpenAI or Claude or these closed source model capabilities, and how, you know, some people are like, oh, anyone building foundation models does not have a moat because everything will get open sourced. And other people are like, that's the only moat. Yeah. I'm curious what your thoughts are.
So that's a great question. I think, first of all, one thing we're starting to see is a lot of people building applications that take a hybrid approach of querying, you know, using multiple models to power the application. And we've actually done this ourselves. So a lot of people visit the Ray documentation. They have questions. And we're, you know, shipping a chatbot on the Ray documentation just to help them use Ray. And we also have LLM-powered debugging features in Anyscale. Like if you're, you know, running some program and you get some error message, there are, you know, debugging is hard, right? There's all these different log files in different places, like different processes have on these, all these different machines have different logs. Our autoscaler has logs. There's different metrics being emitted different places. And you kind of don't currently have to search through all these different logs and different places to figure out what's going wrong. And instead, we'd like to be able to just tell you what's going wrong, or at least get rid of, you know, at least take all of this information and synthesize it in a more human readable way. And so we are building our own like LLM powered features. And the approach that we take does use a hybrid of open models and GPT-4 and things like that. And so you can actually do pretty well at, you know, using, so GPT-4 is the most advanced model today, using the most advanced model when you need it and using cheaper models that are good enough when those are good enough, and having a classifier in front that helps, you know, tell you route that appropriately. So we see model routing becoming a lot more important. And to answer your question, what do I think about the trajectory here? I think open source models are going to be pervasive, are really going to be dominant. I think there are areas where proprietary models will have advantages, and OpenAI and others will do very well. But I think for many use cases, pretty soon all of the models will actually be good enough. I think there are a huge variety of just economically valuable tasks where the models will reach the threshold of being good enough for that.
Yeah, so like in the scenario you described where you just use the open source stuff because it's cheap to do the stuff it's good enough at, then as open source models get better, it'll cannibalize more and more of the use cases that you're using the expensive models for today, right now.
Yeah, I think so.
Okay. But then there will always be new use cases.
Yes, there will always be new use cases. Absolutely.
As humans, are we generally okay with good enough?
I'm very excited for, I mean, the applications that require the most intelligence are probably the most exciting ones, right? I think if you have models that can do research and make new discoveries, I think that's really hard. I'm very excited for when AI, you know, solves some really hard math problems. I think that's, and I guess you're working on reasoning, right? That's just a really important milestone, which of course I don't think we'll get to with just techniques like fine-tuning. I think fine-tuning will help with a lot of things, but to really improve the reasoning capabilities, you're going to have to do more. And
what makes you say that?
Well, mostly just because in the work we've tried to do with fine-tuning, we haven't been able to, you know, to do it. So
that seems true.
Not a proof or anything.
I want to move to actually more of like a personal question briefly. So the Ray Summit, an annual summit, was just a few weeks ago.
It was just this week.
Oh, really?
Monday through Wednesday. So I just finished yesterday. That was like taking all of my attention until
That
until
makes
yesterday.
Me just even more grateful that you're here today. I did not even realize that. Okay, so by the way, these new products that we're talking about, these were just announced and they're still, I think, in preview mode. So they're really new and they're really exciting. I listened to your keynote, or at least the beginning of your keynote for the summit, and you said something interesting, which I want to read back, and then I want to get your reaction. You said, for businesses scaling AI, Ray is everywhere. And AI is not done changing, and the infrastructure challenges are continuing to grow. And these are the challenges that Ray was built for. Scale is our bread and butter. That seems true. Now that seems obvious. That seems right. I think Looking back, that probably was not always obvious. That was probably quite contrarian. And so kind of on a personal level, like, do you feel vindicated? Do you feel like your version of the future that you envisioned came true? Or do you feel like you were kind of as surprised as everyone else?
So I am pretty happy about that. I don't know if I'd use the word vindicated. The reason it was obvious to us is that this was just a problem we ran into ourselves. Like, a lot of people in AI research were trying to scale things. And so maybe a lot of businesses weren't doing that at that point. But if you were doing AI research, and even around, you know, 2012 or 2013, people were trying to, you know, Google had written papers about training deep nets on, you know, thousands of CPU cores and just trying to scale things. So the idea was definitely around, and it was just a pain point we ran into so much ourselves. People were also talking about reinforcement learning a lot at the time, right? There was AlphaGo, there was, you know, the Dota project from OpenAI. And I think OpenAI had already written some blog posts about, you know, just the compute used to do AI growing exponentially. So I feel good about it. I think it was, it probably was clear to a lot of people who were doing AI research at the time, though.
I think it was clear that for AI researchers, this was important. But how did you know, or did you know, that this would then become important for a lot more people?
Yeah, well, you just couple that with the belief that AI is going to, you know, be used in every industry, and then I think it follows pretty naturally.
And it gets better as you scale it. So.
Yes, yeah. I mean, people were, you know, talking about scale being important for a while, but it really wasn't until OpenAI, I mean, even when OpenAI started, I don't think they were going all in on scale, but it wasn't until a few years later that they just really made a big bet there. And I think they were one of the first to do that.
All right, we're going to ask just a few more questions, and then we'll open it up.
I'm curious, so there's a lot of hype. What do you think is underhyped?
What is underhyped? So I don't know if I have a good answer for this one. I think...
Or what do you think founders should be building that they're not? Maybe that's another version of this.
I think it's hard to underinvest in tools for developers right now. I think there's just so much mileage we're going to get out of that. And I think, you know, this is an area we try to just insist on everybody internally using Copilot-like tools or using, you know, using ChatGPT to help them debug. I think people are still not adopting that at the level that they should be in order to be as productive as possible.
Yeah, I think that's right. I think the world way underbuilds software right now. There's like so much more capacity for software.
Yeah. I'm really excited for, you know, what you guys are doing and just better reasoning capabilities. I think there are a lot of applications. You know, we are pursuing a lot, and most applications are partial automation. You're not automating the entire thing. When I talk to people who want to use AI or LLMs for customer support, they're talking about using LLMs for handling 30% of the customer support or 50%. So I think getting the last mile or just moving the needle there even more will require better reasoning capabilities.
Okay, one last question and then we'll open it up. You're kind of like right in the thick of things. Yeah. You're like running from conference to speaking engagement. I'm just curious, AnyScale is, you know, a leader in the open source ecosystem. You're working with a lot of developers. Like, how are you keeping up with all of this stuff? How are you leading your company through such a crazy period?
Yeah, I think one thing that I try to do and we encourage people to do internally is to really mimic what our customers do and actually build our own AI applications and products. So we are, you know, providing infrastructure, right, for distributed systems, for training, inference, and so on. And our customers are the people building AI applications on top of us. So in order to really, you know, deeply understand what our customers need, we encourage, you know, we try to build a lot of our own AI applications ourselves, just to partly to learn more and to be our own customer. And I mentioned, you know, we're adding features to our product to help use AI for debugging and things like that. And that's motivated partly because it makes our product better, but partly because it helps us understand our customers better. So that's something that we like to do. I also like to just try out and use a lot of other products out there.
Awesome. All right. We'll open it up to questions. All right. Teal Dolphin. Is that anyone? You can come ask your question. Anyone want to claim the question? All right, I'll ask it. To what extent has the GPU scarcity impacted the company?
it has impacted us because it impacts our customers. Mm. So there's two different ways to use our product. One is our main platform, the way it works is that when our customers actually bring their own compute, okay? And they bring their AWS account or their GCP account, and we help them manage the training jobs or deploy services and models inside of their cloud account. So if they have trouble getting access to GPUs, then that is, you know, a problem that we have to help them solve. And there are things we've built here that help, whether it's things like just being able to, you know, quickly see if you can get, like, check availability in different regions or different clouds, or take advantage of spot to whatever extent there is a spot market. I think some capabilities of our platform, like one area we've invested a lot, is really good auto scaling, being able to take advantage, like really like right size the compute resources to the workload that you're running. Like if you need more CPU cores right now, you can get more. If you need more memory, if you need more GPUs, then we start the appropriate things, and it can in a very dynamic way. Now, that works best when you can just start instances on demand and then shut them down on demand. It doesn't work quite as well when you have to reserve everything up front. Now, of course, it's still useful even within a fixed pool of resources, because you may have different applications competing for resources. You may have different models that each have their own different loads. And so it's still useful. But so that's one way that it's affected us. And then with our LLM API and fine-tuning API, we provide the compute. So there, you just hit the API, and you don't have to think about compute resources.
But you do.
I do, yes. Yes.
All right, I guess kind of related. How do you feel about NVIDIA being basically a monopoly for AI accelerators?
So I think there's a lot of exciting work happening on building other hardware accelerators. And I think there's a lot of interesting work happening with TPUs. You know, AWS is also building their own accelerators. I mean, even Intel and AMD are also building things. And one of the neat things about Ray is that it actually makes it easier to just take advantage of whatever different hardware accelerators you have access to. And you can write the code in a pretty portable way. You can, if you want to, you know, you've been training on NVIDIA GPUs and now you want to run the same thing on, you know, like TPUs on GCP. Or maybe you're running you're doing inference, running some large scale like LLM inference service, and you want to, you know, just take advantage of a bunch of different types of resources. That's actually something we enable. So I imagine there will be there's a bit of a renaissance in hardware architecture, and I think a lot of these other chips will be successful and will make it easier to write programs that take advantage of them.
And you handle like utilization, optimization, and things like that? Or no, that's at the model builder level?
So it's a little bit of both. So some of this is done inside of the deep learning framework, like PyTorch. Some of it, things like, we have customers that say, hey, I switched to using AnyScale, and you know, my GPU utilization is now like 90% or whatever, right? There are things like, one thing we see a bunch is, okay, you're training your model, and you're scaling training more and more on GPUs, and it's going great. But then at some scale, you start to be bottlenecked somewhere else, like data ingest and pre-processing. And now, in order to sort of continue to get high GPU utilization as you scale, you need to be able to sort of also separately scale the data ingest and pre-processing. And sometimes you want to do that on CPU machines instead of GPU machines. So we, like, one of the things we are pretty good at, or actually uniquely good at, is separately scaling the CPU compute, like the data ingest and pre-processing, and pipelining that into the training or inference that's happening on GPUs, and like right-sizing the compute resources for both of them, making it elastic. Like, these are the kinds of things that companies like Uber or Pinterest or others are, you know, using Ray for.
You mentioned that the decision to make Ray open source was made way before starting a company. So a few follow-ups to that. All right, one, if you were able to come back to 2016, would you still make Ray open source, or would you rather develop AnyScale right away? Two, what main obstacles and advantages of open source did you experience during your journey? And then three, from a financial standpoint, does support from the community cover the expenses of driving and supporting that community?
Okay.
A lot of questions.
Yeah.
So Take that as you will.
Yeah. So we didn't even think of it as a decision because, you know, we were academics, but we were in grad school. Everything is kind of open. You publish papers, you share all the code and, right. and stuff. So it didn't really cross our minds to right. consider that.
But if it had, know, would you have made the same decision?
I think so. And the reason is that for the kind of, you know, distributed system or the kind of framework that Ray is, I think it helped a lot with adoption. I think it's hard for something like this, a developer tool like this, to really be adopted broadly and used by all these businesses if it's not open source. Like, imagine if there's a proprietary deep learning framework. Would you use that or PyTorch? And I think if we didn't make it open source, then some other open source standard would emerge, and then that thing would become more popular. So I think you kind of want to win. And I think being open source helped a ton with adoption. Now, there's a question about, do we get the cost? What was the question about cost?
Just from a financial standpoint, does the support you get from the community, so does what you get from the open source community cover or outweigh the expenses, the cost of driving and supporting that community?
So if by what you get from the community you're talking about contributions, like code contributions, that is not how we see the main benefit of open source. I think of the main benefit as helping grow adoption and helping it sort of emerge as just a standard, industry standard.
It's like a marketing expense.
I think of it, it's almost like a lead generation kind of thing. Yeah. You know, if everyone's using Ray and AnyScale adds a ton of value for the open source users, then we can sell AnyScale to them. I think you would think that, you know, with an open source project, you just have like thousands of engineers contributing to it. And sometimes people will find bugs and contribute bugs. And some companies that are very invested and actually can make significant contributions, like other companies like, I think, Microsoft and ByteDance and others have really improved Ray support on Kubernetes, for instance. And Ant Group, one of this I mentioned, our first serious user, actually did a lot to improve Ray in production because they were the ones running Ray in production at a large scale. So you do get some major contributions, but, you know, a lot of it is, it's, if you imagine trying to corral thousands of engineers from around the world working on a project, it's a lot of work to also review the code and, yeah. and make sure everybody's working toward the same goal and, yeah. and stuff like that.
All right, related, another question was, what's the conversion rate from Ray to AnyScale?
Great question. So it's a little hard to measure because with an open source project, you don't always have great data on everybody who's using it. I would break it down by the type of user. So I would say the highest conversion is probably with, today, is probably with early startups that are, or startups that just, you know, don't want to think at all about infrastructure, just want to move quickly, and as well as larger, like more traditional enterprises that don't have like the strongest engineering teams in the world yeah. and could use the help. And then the companies that are less likely to convert today are a company like Uber, for instance, which they just have like, you know, hundreds of people managing infrastructure and building a lot of tooling around it. But that said, I think this will change. This is starting to change as the value that we build into AnyScale is growing. So early on, the main value prop for AnyScale was just like, we manage Ray for you and run it for you. But now, if you are running Ray and you migrate to AnyScale, it's like, it's going to run faster. And that wasn't something we could have said, you know, a year ago. And so that actually, I think some of these things will change.
All right. Next question. Do you consider Databricks a competitor or a partner? How do you manage that line? These are spicy questions.
So Databricks was a sponsor for our Ray Summit just earlier this week. We have some collaborations where they've been working on making Spark or Ray run on top of Spark. And they've actually been doing this because now you can run Ray on top of Databricks. So they have a Ray offering as well. But you can run Ray, by the way, in a lot of places. You can run Ray on, like, Google Cloud just launched a managed Ray offering. There you can run Ray on, like, AWS has a managed Ray offering. I think Domino Data Lab, some other companies have managed Ray offerings. So there are other places you can run Ray. Of course, it runs the best on AnyScale. But no, we have a good relationship.
Another question. If you were building an AI product today, what layers of the stack would you consider must-have on day one?
Let's see. If I were building an AI product today, well, I have to think about that. You know, I think the way I would get started is with an API, right? I wouldn't try to create a large data set right out of the box, or, you know, train a model. I would just use existing APIs. I would use a variety of models. I would try out OpenAI. I would try out the Llama models. And I would focus on just really validating the product UX and experience, and then worry about increasing capabilities after you've got the form factor and some other things figured out. I think, you know, there's other things like, you know, I mentioned the observability tooling. I think you'll find that to be important pretty quickly, but you might end up building some of your own stuff there.
All right. Last question. What are your thoughts on the amount of training versus inference compute needed in the future?
Yeah, that's tough. I would bet on inference right now, but yeah, I think certainly today we see a lot more, for our customers, we see a lot more compute spent on inference. Yeah. And I think that'll probably stay the same.
All right. Well, I guess the actual last question is, if people here want to try out AnyScale's new products, where should they go?
So if you just Google AnyScale or AnyScale endpoints, we have the API available. You can, you know, sign up in a matter of seconds or minutes. And so if you want to try out the Llama models, this is probably the easiest way to just try them out. You can use it. If you're already using OpenAI, it's OpenAI compatible, so you can continue to use the OpenAI client and just change the, you know, like the URL and the API token and the model name, and then you can run your same application with the Llama models.
Awesome. Robert, thank you so much for joining us on extremely short notice, also after a crazy week. We really appreciate you coming here and being like very direct and honest, and this is a great conversation. So thank you, and round of applause for Robert.
Yeah, thank you. Yeah, thank you all for the great questions, and this was a lot of fun.